No question about it, tourism matters to Michigan's economy. The Pure Michigan advertising campaign attracted more than 4 million out-of-state visitors just last year. But when it comes looking ahead to climate change, just how will warming weather impact tourism in Michigan? Sarah Nichols is an associate professor of tourism at Michigan State University. Good to have you with us, Sarah.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
And she's joined by someone who knows what it is like to try to keep one step ahead of Michigan's climate. Jim McInnes is president and CEO of Crystal Mountain in Thompsonville. Hello, Jim.
Glad to join you.
Good to have you with us. Sarah, tell us, what are climate researchers predicting in terms of climate change in Michigan? What do you think it's going to look and feel like?
Well, in the medium to longer term, what we expect to see, of course, is gradual warming globally and here in Michigan. And that has all kinds of implications for both the climate but also the environment. So some of the potential changes that we might see that have implications for tourism and recreation would include changes in our Great Lakes levels, also changing levels and potentially declining water levels in our lakes, inland lakes and streams, warming of the water, which has implications for the distribution of fish and other aquatic species. And of course, a real concern here in Michigan is the potential spread of invasive or nuisance species. And some of those are more likely to spread more quickly given warming conditions in the air and the water.
And then when we see the experts predicting things like, in fact, I'm going to quote a story, a recent story in the Detroit Free Press by writer Kathleen Levy. And here was the quote: by 2114, climate change could give Michigan's winters the feel of southern Ohio and give its summers the drier, warmer feel of northern Arkansas. Jim McInnes, those words cannot be music to the ears of someone who runs a ski resort.
No, we've been following climate change for quite a number of years now and actually have been investing millions of dollars in equipment and energy in order to deal with it. So, you know, we can definitely feel it on the bottom line.
And when you talk about investment, what kind of equipment and what kinds of things have you been investing in?
Well, one of the things that happens is that the climate is a lot more variable. So we get some really cold spells, we get some really warm spells. And so we've had to invest in, for example, we have snowmaking throughout just about all of our ski hill, and we've had to invest really millions of dollars in purchasing snow guns, snow pipe, snowmaking pipe, wires, pumps, transformers, all that sort of thing, so that we can increase the capacity of our snowmaking, so we can take advantage of the shorter snowmaking windows, so we can make a lot of snow in a very short time. Well, that's good because it can be done more efficiently in some cases, but it does take a lot of capital.
I can only imagine. And you do a lot of things at Crystal Mountain to try to leave a smaller carbon footprint, don't you?
Well, we've been trying, yes, for some years now. We built the Midwest's first LEED certified spa, where, for example, we recycle the air in the indoor pool facility. We pull it out, pull the heat out through a heat exchanger, and we pump it into, we have a spa as part of that building. We pump it into the lower level spa rooms to heat those rooms. The other thing we've done is we've changed out about 250 light bulbs in our 33,000 square foot conference facility, the Crystal Center. And by changing these out, these incandescent bulbs out to 150-watt incandescent to 13-watt LEDs, we're able to save about 75,000 kilowatt hours a year, which is really a lot of electricity. For example, you could power a Chevy Volt 250,000 miles a year on the energy savings.
Huh.
And not only that, but not only do we save on the energy for the lighting, but we cool the building with an 80-ton chiller. So by taking the heat out of those light bulbs, we're actually able to reduce our chiller cooling load by about 15%. So that saves additional energy.
Sarah, it strikes me that these are the kinds of steps that business owners and managers throughout Michigan need to be doing, in a sense of, don't wait for this change because the change is here, correct?
Well, the change is definitely coming. I think one point to make is that, to sort of reiterate what Jim mentioned, is that one of the key characteristics of climate change is that increasing variability. And so that might mean more hot summers, but it might also mean more extreme winters. which might be counterintuitive to some people. And, of course, increasing variability means that it becomes harder to plan because you really have to be able to accommodate more variability and extremes at either end of the spectrum. And, of course, another challenge for the tourism industry is that a lot of our industry is made up of quite small family-owned and operated businesses. They tend to work on relatively short to medium-term time frames, so they don't necessarily have the time and the ability and the capital to make those kinds of changes that other areas and companies are able to make.
If you just joined us, we're speaking about climate change and what it could mean to tourism in Michigan. We're speaking with Sarah Nichols, who's an associate professor of tourism at Michigan State University, and with Jim McInnes, who's president and CEO of Crystal Mountain. And I'm kind of interested, we talked about the effect of climate change on lake levels, changing the levels in Great Lakes and inland lakes, and warming of water and changing the pattern of spread of invasive and nuisance species. How about the wildlife, Sarah? What might we see from climate change in terms of impact on our state's wildlife?
Well, the issue there, of course, is how the change in the natural environment and the availability of species as far as plants and prey animals might change. So we are likely to see shifts in both plant and animal species as their comfort zones shift typically northwards and upwards. So a good example here, sort of shifting to the vegetation side, mm-hmm. would be our full leaf viewing, which is very popular. You know, people come from all over to see the changing leaves. As the suitable habitat for those critical species like maple and aspen moves northwards, we might see a changing distribution of where those very gorgeous trees are in the fall, which has implications for where our tourists might go to see those colors.
And we have actually talked about that on Stateside. We spoke with a photographer who leads folks on color tours, and he says it is not what we saw 20 years ago. The colors by no means are, he definitely sees the impact of our changing climate in the kind of color show that we get in the fall.
Absolutely. And so that sort of analogy applies to lots of different kinds of activities as far as when and where people are going to be able to engage in different activities, whether it's viewing the leaves in the autumn or whether there's enough ice on the lakes to allow ice fishing in the winter. Whether there's enough snow on the ground for cross-country skiing and snowmobiling activities that it is not feasible to make snow for.
Yes. In fact, with that in mind, Jim McInnes, as you make snow at Crystal Mountain, there is a point where even if you've made it, it's going to turn into a muddy mess if it's too mild. I think a couple of winters ago was certainly not friendly to ski resorts. What can you do, if anything, to look ahead and try to be ahead of the game and have options?
Well, and I think the variability is going to continue. And if I might comment for a minute, this whole idea about the polar vortex, and as I understand it, you know, the way that the jet stream works is it's powered by the temperature differential between the, you know, the warm temperature at the mid-latitudes and the cold temperature at the pole.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happening, because the ice is melting at the poles are warming up. So the temperature differential is less. And if you've ever studied physics, you know that all heat engines are driven by this temperature differential. And the power output of the heat engine is a function of, you know, the more temperature differential, the more potential you have to drive the engine.
Yes.
So what's happening is the jet stream is slowing down, and it's actually stalling. In certain areas, it's meandering around because it's kind of lost some of its energy.
Kind of like a river that blows its banks.
Exactly. And what's happened is, as you mentioned a couple of years ago, it was 82 degrees. I was bicycling up here in March. It was 82 degrees because the lower part of the jet stream stalled somewhere else. Well, this year we were very fortunate. We got lucky. The jet stream stalled over the Midwest, and we've had really good snow conditions all season, and we expect to be skiing until mid-April, I would say, this year. But our brethren, our ski areas on the West Coast, and even some in British Columbia that normally get 36 feet of snow, They only opened briefly in mid-January, and they were only open for a week, and they had to close for the season.
Boy.
So it can be pretty devastating. And when you get these temperature swings, and especially if it stays either really hot for a long time or really cold, for example, in the summertime, we found that golfers don't like to golf when it's over 90 degrees. So your golf business goes way down if it's really hot, particularly for an extended time. And then likewise in the winter, we've had very cold temperatures, particularly on the other side of the lake in the Wisconsin-Minnesota area. Their skier visits are down considerably because it's just been so cold. People, you know, they just didn't want to venture out into the cold temperatures. So these extremes caused by the stalling of the jet stream one way or another, whether it's too hot or too cold, can really wreak havoc on a business. But that's kind of a long, you really have to take a long view vision in it, and it takes a lot of capital. And you look at the long term, and then you try to figure out how can you inoculate yourself against these variable weather conditions.
And Sarah, is that really the challenge to all the tourism businesses in Michigan? You really need to start the strategic planning and kind of shift your business model and be ready for what's coming?
Absolutely. I mean, I think diversification is critical, which is what Jim has just been talking about. Mm-hmm. And again, having the vision, but also having the capital to back that vision up and to be able to offer that range of year-round indoor and outdoor opportunities. But I think this raises a good point, especially somewhere in Michigan, in the mid-latitudes, while for those activities that need ice or snow and aren't able to make that snow, we might see decreases in activity. For especially in the spring and autumn, we could see some real opportunity for gains. So offering longer seasons for golfing and for all kinds of outdoor activity. So we're lucky here to be in a place where we might see some gains, as well as potentially some losses.
Interesting insights from Sarah Nichols, Associate Professor of Tourism at Michigan State University, and the President and CEO of Crystal Mountain, Jim McInnes, will be happily strapping on those skis into April. Thank you so much to both of you for talking with us today.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you much.